Chapter 2. My thoughts were still on Jackie and Ron as I drove to my appointment with Miss Evangeline the night following our coffeehouse chat. Jackie hadn't opened up to Pat and me after all. In fact, the longer we sat at Grandy's, the more uncomfortable we became. It was evident that Jackie was fighting back tears and would not be sharing her misery with anyone. Pat had called after I got home, wondering what we could do to help. My advice was that we pray for Jackie and wait until she was willing to share with us. What else could we do? It had been a long time since the school trip to the Carver farm, so I had to consult my GPS to get directions to Miss Evangeline's home and was surprised to see it was not that far out of town. When I was a child, it had seemed like a long, long way. The sun had set and twilight was shadowing the hills as I turned off the pavement onto the Carver's private drive. The road my escape crunched down was gravel and narrow. I felt as if I were in a time tunnel, not to an actual destination, but traveling back into history. How many carriages, horses, and wagons had traveled this secluded lane? It would not have surprised me at all to see a dashing horseman or a buggy filled with ladies in capes and long dresses clattering toward me. At last the driveway divided, one branch going to the right, the other to the left. Guessing that one led to the front of the house and the other to the back, I took the right-hand turn. To prove my decision had been a wise one, as I topped a knoll, the mansion rose before me. Built in the 18th century, according to information I found on the internet, the three-story russet brick edifice rose straight and tall, a double chimney at either end. No welcoming porch, as on many southern houses, just clean, straight lines. The roof jutted out above the upper stories, and there was a brick ledge beneath each of the windows. It looked very much at home in its surroundings, almost as if it had grown there. It was elegant in its simplicity and lovely, surrounded by shrubs and trees. In a few more weeks, flowers would be blooming all around it. I sat for a bit, just drinking in the beauty of this magnificent home. I would have to park here and walk the short distance to the front door, but that was no more than 50 feet. The walkway was made of bricks, with fern, hostas, hyacinths, and azaleas crowding both sides. I could imagine how colorful it would be when the flowers were in bloom. At the end of the walk, four brick steps rose to the front door, which was dark charcoal, as were the shutters framing the windows. No doorbell, but a large brass knocker shaped like a lion's head hung on the door. Just as I raised my hand to knock, the door swung open and Evangeline Carver stood before me, bathed in the light coming from inside the house. She was a small person, short gray hair in curls that stood out from her head, dressed in dark slacks and a bright red cotton sweater. She smiled at me for a moment, then reached out a slim hand and grasped my arm. "Nettie? You are Nettie McNeil, aren't you? I feel as if I know you. Come in. I've been waiting for you." The only other person who called me Nettie instead of Ned was my neighbor, Ann Decker. But then Evangeline and Ann were of the same generation, a generation given to more formality. I stepped into the foyer and blinked at the sudden change from twilight to the brilliance coming from a chandelier in the tall ceiling. A small table holding a bouquet of white gardenias and a rose-colored lamp stood against one wall. Miss Evangeline barely gave me time to say it was nice to see her again before turning and walking briskly down the hall. I followed, trying to take in the grandeur of the house. The floors were wide plank, polished to a soft gloss. Wallpaper in a muted navy blue figure lined the walls of the hall. But my hostess evidently wasn't letting me linger to admire her home. "Come on into the kitchen," she flung over her shoulder. "I'm sure you could use a cup of coffee after that drive. Myra has gone home for the day, but I'm a pretty good hand at pouring liquid refreshment. Myra is my cook, you know, she said, going to the cabinet. The fragrance of freshly brewed coffee met me as I stepped into the remarkable kitchen. The floor was red brick, polished and smooth. Directly in front of me was a huge fireplace, taking up half a wall. It definitely looked original. The bricks were dull and chipped. It had a long walnut mantle. The whole fireplace was wide enough for a person to step into. On one side was a small warming oven, and below it, an opening that was filled with wood for the fire. On the other side was an inglenook, or sitting area. I imagined a spit had once stretched across the blaze for the cook to turn a roasting pig or chicken. A tall wooden churn and a polished fireplace set, complete with poker, bellows, a copper bed-warming pan, a shovel, and a broom, stood on the brick hearth. Miss Evangeline saw that my eyes were riveted on the fireplace, and she chuckled. "Been there since the 18th century," she said, "like the house. There was no way I was going to tear it down when I had the kitchen modernized." She motioned me toward a wood table. I sank into a dining chair, frankly gazing around at this large, well-lighted room. Miss Evangeline evidently liked wood. The chandelier hung from a vaulted ceiling with exposed beams dark from age. Two walls of varnished wood cabinets, a granite countertop, a sink under the window, a recessed refrigerator, and an up-to-the-minute stove completed the furnishings. The kitchen had undergone some modernizing in the last 200 years, while keeping the flavor of a couple of centuries past. "There," she said, placing a tray laden with a carafe of coffee, two cups and cream and sugar on the table. "Help yourself," she added, folding her hands and beaming at me. She waited until I had a full cup of coffee in front of me before pouring her own. She swallowed a small sip, set her cup down, and smiled. "You probably have a whole lot of questions," she said. "Why did I call out of the blue? Why do I want you to take pictures of my home? And above all, what does the rest of this house look like?" I nodded, but before I could answer, she went on. "You don't know me from Adam, Nettie, but I know your family. I especially got acquainted with your dear Uncle Javin and was so crushed when he went to prison. You see, I just knew he couldn't have murdered anybody. Such a gentle, kind soul." "I had no idea," I managed to say before she was off and running again. "Yes, well, some things are so far in the past, you know, and dredging them up doesn't do one bit of good. Just brings back sad memories. Besides, you were a child when your folks took you to Atlanta, and children don't need to know too much about these things. I was glad when I heard you were back in town. You see, I'm not getting any younger, hard as that is for me to believe, and I need to take care of a few things before I leave this beautiful old farm that has been my family's home for a mighty long time. I called you for a very special assignment, Nettie, because if you are anything like your family, you are trustworthy, and I want what I'm about to tell you to remain just between you and me." I had a feeling there was no use in responding to Miss Evangeline, because she was what my father used to call wound up. She wanted me to listen, so that's what I did. Without warning, she grabbed my arm. I jumped. She whispered, "Shh. What is that? Did you hear anything, Nettie?" Her grip was so tight, my wrist hurt. Fear shone from her wide blue eyes. "No," I said, lowering my voice too. The hand that gripped me shook. My mouth went suddenly dry at the abrupt change in her manner. "You go peek around that corner, and I'll look in the pantry," she pointed toward the hall. Torn between feeling silly and being afraid of what I might find, I did as Miss Evangeline ordered. I saw nothing but the area we had just walked down to get to the kitchen. Something, however, felt different. Maybe it was Miss Evangeline's terror that had communicated itself to me, but I had a feeling of menace, and I shivered as if a cold breeze had passed through. Was that a muffled sound of some sort? Holding my breath, I listened. A footstep? A creaking floorboard? Had someone been listening to our conversation? A cold prickle of fear ran down my spine as I returned to the table. Miss Evangeline closed the pantry door and sat down again. "Well?" she asked. I shook my head. "Nothing." "This house is so old that a few family ghosts may linger, you know. They are friendly, nothing to be afraid of. But real people, well, that's something else. Maybe I'm just an old woman who is getting confused with age, Nettie. But I don't think so. You see, I'm pretty sure somebody is trying to kill me."